Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Genocide Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Hope Wong, and today we'll be talking to Dr. Sabina Hildebrandt about her book, The Anatomy of Murder, Ethical Transgressions, and Anatomical Science During the Third Reich. Dr. Hildebrandt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Hildebrandt, I wonder if you could begin our interview by telling us a bit about yourself.
So I'm trained as a physician in Germany, didn't do much clinical research, did wet lab research in rheumatology for a while, did a postdoc in the United States in the late 1980s, and then returned to Germany to raise my family. And then through my husband's work, we ended up in Ann Arbor, Michigan in the early 2002, around then. I had been an anatomy educator before in Germany, and there I started working more in anatomy education, including in the dissection labs. So I was basically on my third career when I was confronted with a question. I was interested coming late to anatomy in life. One of the questions that I was interested in was, where do the bodies come from that we work in an anatomical education?
Absolutely. And it's a very interesting topic. And I know you go into the history of that process in your book. So just to add more information for our audience, how exactly did this project start, or what drove you to actually research the topic on the Third Reich and the anatomical science during that process?
Well, I'm born not that long after the end of the Second World War in Germany, with parents who were young children during the Third Reich, and were part of with their family part of this whole experience on the perpetrator side of things. I grew up in a Germany where there were no Jewish neighbors, where certain things were kept quite silenced and secret when it came to certain topics. There were voids in the landscape where synagogues used to be. So there was always an interest for me to understand what happened to our Jewish neighbors, what happened to my family. And when I came into my studies of medicine in the late 70s, early 80s, the first studies came out on medicine during the Third Reich, so I read these avidly, and I thought I was well informed, only to find out when I started on my third career in anatomy that there was a history that I had never heard of. In 2005, a colleague at the University of Michigan asked me what I thought about the Perkopf Atlas. And I had never heard of the Perkopf Atlas and was highly embarrassed. And that's when I started researching the topic of this atlas, which turned out to be that Perkopf was an Austrian Nazi who had worked, among others, with bodies of persons who had been executed by the Nazi regime. So I got interested in the topic and wrote my first paper on that subject.
That's amazing. And so I know you discuss your personal connection to Germany and, you know, through your research as a medical professional. But could you talk more about the specific research process? Where in your medical education did learning about history come in? Because this is such an interdisciplinary project, and you know, you don't hear too often about medical professionals jumping into the historical field. So what made you feel like that was something you could do or something you'd want to do? Did anyone reach out to you to inspire you to do this?
As I said, I'd always been interested in history and also in questions of medical ethics that started even with my own dissection course in anatomy in Germany back then, when my fellow students and I were gathering. We weren't learning so much the structure of the human body, but how coping with death and dying. And we had we met to discuss these topics. So I'd always been interested in that area. And then also, I should say, in Germany has a tradition of connecting the history of medicine with the ethics of medicine. So there were many departments of history and medicine and ethics of medicine. Nowadays, they tend to be bioethics departments at German universities, but at the time, it was more historically oriented ethics of medicine. So these were simply interests of mine, and I thought, and I saw that they actually applied in my newly chosen career in anatomy, where I found out that when I came to the U.S., not all bodies were those of body donors. There were also bodies of persons who had were unclaimed, and I became interested in looking at that at that connection. Also about the use of bodies of executed persons in the United States, which was anathema to me, but seemed to be okay with some of my anatomy colleagues. So these questions always came together for me. What I was doing in the anatomy lab together with what had happened historically. And I couldn't easily find answers. And so actually I set out to find them.
That's so interesting. And I guess building off of that, because you struggled with finding answers and this is what launched your research, what do you think was the biggest challenge you faced while working on this book and going through the research process?
Interestingly enough, the research was easy to do. You just had, you know, you just had to come up with the idea of seeing the void in the literature. It was easy to fill that gap with a study. So I had learned scientific thinking and I applied and scientific research. I had done wet lab research and published. So I knew how to write and I knew how to do research and I applied that to history. So I gathered data and that was relatively simple. So others had actually started working on this question of the history of the anatomical departments in Germany, but there were only a few studies at maybe a handful of anatomical departments in Germany. So I reached out to these colleagues and discussed with them how they came up with their material and I looked around and you know, when you look closely, then there actually was a lot of material in the literature. And I then asked my own questions. One of the colleagues had found that during the Second World War, German anatomists published papers that explicitly mentioned the use of bodies of executed persons. So for me, the question arose whether there was a new thing under the Nazis, which it wasn't. I also wanted to know whether similar things happened in the English language literature, which is the only other language that I can easily access. So I, you know, that was a study that I did where I looked at thousands of papers, and I could do that because the University of Michigan, just as the Harvard Library System, they have a vast array of publications from that time that I could easily access.
So one question I wanted to add was, you referenced the great silence in your book, referring to the lack of research or even just the discussion of this topic. Did you face any pushback in your department or amongst colleagues in your field in pursuing this research at all?
No. I had no pushback, not compared to what some of my older colleagues experienced one of the pioneers in the field in Germany is Gerhard Aumüller from Marburg. And he was told by his colleagues at the time in the 1990s that he shouldn't work on the subject because he was studying the nest. Nothing like that ever happened to me. I got some skepticism from very old colleagues who were pupils of the anatomist that I was writing about. But basically, once I presented my data, and that's the good thing when you work with good scientists, they're convinced by data. So when I showed them my historical data, they realized that, yeah, indeed, there was a history of ethical transgressions. They simply didn't know about that history because it wasn't talked about. It was silenced, actively silenced.
Amazing. So some of this material, I would assume, is quite draining for some people to research. How did you navigate this material while maintaining either a level of objectivity or just getting through the material itself?
Well, I'm at a distance. There's the Atlantic between me and Germany. So that makes certain things easier. For me, it is easier to fill this void in our historical knowledge than not fill it. I really felt this void. I needed to know. And that's what's always been driving me forward. Emotionally difficult for me were other types of studies that I've done later, biographical work on victims. When I got into contact with families. So I have done that only very rarely, and that's a much more difficult work.
So if we could briefly talk about the book itself, if you could give a broad overview just for our audience so they know more about the book and can look into it further, could you do that, a brief overview?
Sure. Yeah. So basically, The Anatomy of Murder is the story about ethical transgressions in the anatomical sciences in Nazi Germany at the time. It starts with an overview over the historiography of medicine in the Third Reich. Basically, it talks about that silence, which is a common known fact in Germany in general, in medicine specifically. And then I talk about the placement of anatomical science within the German medicine at the time. I talk about the connections between the anatomists and politics. I look at the political spectrum of the anatomists themselves, some of whom were convinced Nazis, others, actually quite a large group, were persecuted by the Nazi regime and were forced to emigrate because they were of Jewish descent or political oppositionals. So I look at that whole history. I look at the Society for Anatomy in Germany, the Anatomische Gesellschaft. And from there, I then actually look at the body procurement for anatomical teaching and research at the time. And I point out how that body procurement, the traditional body procurement that was regulated by laws, changed under the Nazis in that it included increasing numbers of victims of the Nazi regimes. There were victims among persons who were killed in the psychiatric institutions, in the so-called euthanasia programs. There were Jewish citizens who committed suicide in high numbers. There were political prisoners who died in the prisons or were murdered actively in the prison system. And then there were, of course, all these persons who died under the conditions of the increasing network of camps, not just the centralized concentration camps, but also the decentralized camps for forced laborers and prisoners of war. And then, of course, we see the rising number of executions. And here it is important to note that traditionally the bodies of executed prisoners had been the first source for anatomical bodies in the whole world. So the first laws that talk about bodies for anatomical dissection go back to the 1300s in Europe, and they refer to bodies of executed prisoners. So that's a traditional source used all over the world, including in Germany. So in 1933, when the Nazis came into power, they basically took over these older Prussian laws mostly, and over the time changed them so that we now see an exponential rise of executions in the court system. So these are not people who were killed in the camps. These are persons who were killed after court trials in the civilian courts and in the military courts. And these bodies were all amenable to anatomical use in education and in research. And the anatomists used these bodies avidly because they were, quote unquote, fresh bodies and bodies of young persons. So they were extremely desirable for anatomists to use in education and research. And then after I look at that history, I go into the details of anatomists who from 1942 on then not only used the bodies of the dead, but also the bodies who were planned on being killed for purposes of anatomy, either after manipulating them with vitamin C, like Max Clara did, or these were persons who were already in the concentration camps. And then we know of two anatomists who used them for anatomical purposes. They selected them and killed them for anatomical purposes. And then I look at the history of these types of ethical transgressions and how they shine a light on current practices in anatomical education and research nowadays.
Amazing. So as a medical professional yourself, how have you or your department come to terms with the ethical issues of your predecessors? Do you have any projects that you're working on to educate your contemporaries at all?
Yeah, I have a running series of lectures that I offer to my students at least once a year. My students have the option to attend one of my lectures on Nazi anatomy. I speak on this topic wherever I'm invited. I've created modules on the subject that can be downloaded online for anybody who wants to use them. I'm working on a new set of modules with anatomical colleagues who look also at other questions of ethics and anatomical education. Here in the U.S., we are very much interested in discussing the situation with for-profit body donation in the United States. These are institutions that are sometimes called body brokers that have created private body donation companies and basically offer families to take care of the bodies of their loved ones. The families think they're doing a good thing, but ultimately these bodies are being sold in the United States and worldwide for postgraduate education, and these companies make a huge profit, and they prey on the indigent. So yes, there is a whole array of work that is currently ongoing in the area of ethics in anatomy, and I am thankful to say that I am working with an international group of colleagues that is interested in these subjects, and we're trying to create an awareness among our colleagues.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. So what have been some of the effects, or have you seen any as a result of your book specifically? Are more departments assessing their ethics or connections to these practices just based off of the research coming out in your book, or have they been working on this over the years also?
So I'm collaborating with groups in Europe on investigations. One just ended in Göttingen on an embryo collection at the Göttingen Anatomy Institute with a group in Innsbruck, who was in Austria, who has been looking at the history of the anatomy there. And I've been invited to collaborate on a huge investigation of the in Strasbourg, where the Germans had a university from 1941 to 1944, and where August Hirt, the most notorious murderer among the anatomists, actually was the director of the anatomical department. So there are many ongoing investigations. I'm not sure that my book influenced that, but I would say my book is part of a movement to create more clarity on this history.
Amazing. Aside from the projects that you've already mentioned, are you working on anything else right now?
So a new project that has been actually initiated by our medical students here at Harvard Medical School is last year they came up to us and said, well, why is it that you show in anatomical representations in your lectures only white male young guys? And I said, well, it has to do with the fact that these are the materials that we have available. And the student said, well, we feel that we are not represented here. So they have now started a new project that they call Addressing Bias in Medical Education by Inclusive Anatomical Representation. And that's a project that's just starting out. We are collecting new materials for anatomical representation. I think it will be part of a long-term research project that needs to be done, whether by myself or by somebody else, we'll have to see. We are collecting inclusive anatomical representation, and hopefully in the future we will have, these students have just been granted funds from our dean here at Harvard Medical School to maybe even create new illustrations together with medical illustrators. We'll have to see. This is a project that is only just getting started.
That's really exciting, and I'm happy to hear that the medical students are taking your lead and trying to work on more research in this
field. Oh, the medical students are leading me. No, that's the beauty of working in anatomy. Students are fresh from wherever they come from, first year of medical school, and they come with these enormously important ideas. And as long as we listen as educators, we can learn from them all along. And we're basically ahead of the game in terms of creating an inclusive environment in anatomy, which is all the more important seeing what's happening in the United States currently here in June 2020.
Absolutely. So as we're getting close to the end of our interview, what lesson do you hope readers or our listeners will gain from this book? What do you want them to walk away from this with?
It's important to know the history because it shines a light on what we're currently doing and what will be done in the future.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Hildebrandt, we've taken up a bit of your time. I want to thank you for being on our show today. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me and for giving this important topic venue.
Absolutely.